Welcome to the Beyond Finding Equine podcast. I'm Morgan Stevens, an equine postural and performance practitioner. I created this podcast for other horse enthusiasts to learn and hear about all sides of the equine industry. On this podcast, I'll be interviewing other professionals and getting their takes on the horse world. You can expect controversy, advice, inspiration, and surely to get your horses feeling fine. Welcome back to the Feel and Find Equine podcast. We appreciate you being here, and I'm so very grateful for you guys being patient during our technical difficulties. Our podcast used to come out on Fridays, but then we switched it to Wednesdays, and for some reason, this episode just didn't get thrown into the loop, so it is coming to you on a Friday, but still think you guys will enjoy it just as much. I think spring has finally sprung here in Utah, and I am loving it. I have been so enjoying the warmer weather and working with my horses, and so I hope you are enjoying it somewhere too. Our episode today goes over all things positive reinforcement, and I know that there are a couple of you R+ enthusiasts and trainers out there that listen, and so I think you'll really enjoy this episode as our guest shares a lot of tips and her story, and so this will be a good one for you. For those who don't maybe know about positive reinforcement and maybe don't understand it, this is also a great episode because our guest busts a lot of myths about equine behavior and really explains what positive reinforcement is to the horse. So she's known as the unbridled goddess. Please welcome Tara Davis. Okay, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you got into what you do and what led you to be where you are today.
Sure. So I started out on this path kind of unintentionally. I rescued a horse and she really did not respond well to anything aversive. And for her, like we always say, you know, the horse defines what's aversive. And for her, even just like the mere presence of a human was very aversive to her. The pressure that just your presence had was too much for her. And so I decided I wasn't going to give up on her. And I just started exploring ways to make my presence with her more enjoyable. And at this point, this was nearly 10 years ago, and positive reinforcement wasn't super well publicized or talked about in the horse world. And so I remember vividly looking up how to train a wild Mustang without force, because I was just like, there's nothing out there. And the closest thing I could find to her was like a completely untouched, you know, wild Mustang. So yeah, I just basically got nothing from all of my Google searches and just began to do kind of what I had learned from working with some dogs who were having, you know, fear issues and behavioral issues, and just basically counter conditioning my presence to her. And that kind of just ended up moving into using positive reinforcement to shape some behaviors from a distance, which then led to shaping behaviors up closer and developing more comfort, developing her comfort levels so that she was able to be able to engage in the training sessions on her own terms and with autonomy. And so, yeah, that's where I started. And the interesting thing was, I call it a horse-led approach, because she was the only horse I was working with at the time in this style. And I really just let her guide me with what worked, what didn't work, developing, you know, these kind of strategies and methodologies. And the interesting thing was that once I had really started looking into positive reinforcement as more of a modality, I realized that all of these things that she had kind of, you know, quote unquote, taught me were like spot on correct textbook positive reinforcement in like a variety of different ways. It was really incredible.
So I know positive reinforcement, obviously there's a lot of people who are doing it, but I also think that it's kind of a growing thing too, and maybe a lot of people don't understand. So can you talk a little bit about like positive reinforcement and maybe the boundaries that come with that?
Yeah, definitely. So the the thing that's wonderful about positive reinforcement spreading is that more people are learning about it, more people are getting proficient in it, which means that there's more resources for people who are starting out. Whereas I got really lucky when I was starting out, where I had a really strong background in horse training beforehand already. So I had a good idea of like timing and release and boundaries. And I was working with a horse who was not pushy, and we were able to develop a really healthy relationship where we both had, you know, we both had our lines that we didn't cross, and it never took any, because she was so sensitive and she was so aversive or intolerant to aversives, it was like I never had to really establish any boundaries with her. Mm-hmm. So I lucked out. However, there are lots of people who are coming to positive reinforcement, and because it's still kind of a newer modality with horses, there isn't a ton of in-person resources, which I think can be difficult for people starting out. The great thing about, you know, if you are a relatively green horse person and you have a horse that you need help with, you can, you know, hop on Google and look at all these trainers in your area and you can get help. However, if you were to look up, you know, positive reinforcement trainers in your area, you'd be really lucky if you found one,
right,
in like a couple hour radius of you, just because it is such a, it's such a new and like blossoming modality with the horses. The great thing is there's incredible resources online. And you know, you can enroll in various courses and classes online, and there's lots of really great books out there. I do think that something that doesn't necessarily get stressed enough with people who are kind of new and just testing out positive reinforcement is to realize how strong of a reinforcer it is. It's so easy to teach behaviors, and that's fantastic, but you also have to be really, really cognizant and conscious of what you are teaching them. So I see a lot of people who are accidentally training, you know, negative behaviors like pushiness, mouthiness, mugging, begging, that kind of those kind of like pushy behaviors, which sometimes start out as like being cute, like, oh, look, they're trying to get the, you know, they're trying to be cuddly with me, they're trying to get close to me. And sometimes if we're accidentally reinforcing that with our either, you know, poor timing or deliberate timing, or, you know, just not necessarily having a good foundation behavior around food, then we can create horses very quickly and very easily that believe that the way to the food is to be, you know, pushy, muggy in your space. Whereas it's also equally incredibly easy to teach a horse really great behaviors around food that make it super safe for you to be around and engaged with them with food. And so that's something that if you're starting out with positive reinforcement, make sure that A, your horse doesn't have a lot of food anxiety. That's one of the biggest things. You can teach really good manners around food all the time, but if your horse has ulcers or is on a diet where they're like maybe getting a flake in the morning and a flake at night, or even a flake in the morning, a flake in midday, and a flake at night, they're still going to have a lot of resource guarding around food, and you're going to have an increase in anxious behaviors, which might end up, if a horse is really frustrated, that you can end up with, you know, displaced aggression, or you know, end up the horse ending up going over threshold, biting, something like that. So that's kind of my first thing, is make sure your horse has good relationship with food, that they're having their needs met regarding food before you start a food-based training style. And then the next thing to make sure is that you're working on building a really good foundational behavior around food from the get-go. That should be the first thing you're working on. If you're working with a trainer, you're working with a course, you know, make sure you're asking how we're going to be establishing that, and just making sure that they're able to help guide you through. It's again something that's really easy to establish, and if you're doing it from day one, you're going to have a horse who has really, really great consistent boundaries around food, and it's going to keep both of you safe, happy, relaxed. That's one of the most important things that I can stress.
Absolutely, that's great information for sure. In your opinion, does positive reinforcement like only work alone or exclusively for horses, or can there be a mix between positive and negative reinforcement? I know, like with my horses, I've tried to play around a little bit with positive reinforcement, but I don't know like if I could do that full time. So is that just like a lack of knowledge, or how does that work?
So some trainers are very strict in that they believe, you know, if you're going to do positive reinforcement, you should do that alone and nothing else. I am not one of those trainers. I really believe in consistency and clarity around sessions. So, you know, you can set up your stimulus control where the horse understands now we are starting a positive reinforcement session, now we are ending it. And one of my favorite ways to do that is to have a very clear set of tools that we're using, or potentially even only doing it in certain areas. So like, say, for example, you want to teach your horse how to, let's see, what's a good behavior. Let's say you want to teach your horse how to stand on a target. So a stationary target, and you want to start teaching that, but you don't want to use positive reinforcement when you're riding. You don't want to use it when you're catching, leading, that kind of a thing. You would create a habit where you only ever use positive reinforcement when you have your pouch on you. Like I like having a nice big pouch where we have our food, and I use a clicker or a verbal cue. Okay. The great thing about the clicker is it is a really clear marker, and it can help to, especially in the beginning, to create that consistency. If this is me doing a positive reinforcement session with you, we have a you know, I like to have, it gets a little bit more complex. So for a beginner person, it might not necessarily be possible, but I like to do a start behavior, and then I have an end signal. So when my session is done, I give a nice big jackpot. I put food either on the ground or in a pan, and I say all done. And then I take off my pouch, put away my clicker. I remove myself from the situation, or I put the horse back so that it's not confusing to them. Like, okay, I just finished this, you know, 20-minute long session, and now you're going to not use positive reinforcement. You're going to walk me all around the barn, and I'm going to be potentially confused by the fact that we just switched modalities. Now, a horse that's more advanced and has been able to understand the, you know, the end signal and switching over modalities, that's something that down the road they're able to pick up on. And I haven't had any issues with my more advanced horses being able to understand that and be totally balanced and understanding of it. But in the beginning, you want to make sure, you know, if you're doing a session with positive reinforcement and it's not something you're doing all the time, when you end it, try to remove yourself, you know, put the horse back. Don't be there and like tempting them. You know, it's kind of like, we've just been playing this game and now I'm going to turn it off. You want to just like end the session and make sure that they start to develop that understanding that we do this session and then it's done. And if I pull you out later, it might not necessarily be a positive reinforcement session, or it won't be a positive reinforcement session unless there's the pouch, the clicker, and we kind of start, use our start signal, use our end signal.
A couple episodes back, you might remember that we talked about ulcers, and we talked about a specific product aiding in ulcers, and that was NutriBac pH. NutriBac pH is a 100% all-natural blend of plant oils and plant extracts, which aids in neutralizing excess stomach acid, washing out harmful bacteria, and balancing pH during times of stress. This product also encourages feed and water intake during rigorous transportation, competition, and training. It's highly effective at reducing ulcer signs as well as ulcer maintenance. NutriBac is something that I use within my herd, and it saved me from being in a couple of really sticky situations, whether it be ulcers or colic. So if you are interested in trying some or getting your hands on some, please reach out to us either on our social media, Feel and Fine Therapy, or our website, feelandfineequine.com. I know I do have some listeners on here who do use positive reinforcement sometimes or play around with it. So do you have any tips that for them that might help with like getting motivation for horses to do bigger movements?
So that's a tough one because of course it's always based on the individual horse, and you know, that's something that I specialize in, and we can work on developing, you know, developing that with an individualized program. One of the things that I will say is a lot of times, and this is another sometimes controversial topic, and I don't want anyone to take it out of context because, of course, it's always dependent on the horse and making sure we stay under threshold. But I do find that a lot of times in the R plus world, we keep the horse's behaviors really small because we don't want to stress them out by expanding our duration too fast. However, I think that we can sometimes get really stuck in that. So I guess I'll backtrack one step and just say, you know, the idea of duration is you have a behavior that you're building and you want to make sure that you keep the duration short enough between clicks that the horse is not getting frustrated and they understand that the behavior is linked to the click. Now, say for example, we're looking to develop, you know, the trot in a horse. So at first you would maybe be shaping just for, you know, upward energy, then you'd be shaping for taking one step of trot, then two steps of trot, and so on and so forth. And so I think that a lot of times we can get really bogged down in clicking really fast and not allowing the horse to continue to develop longer duration periods. Of course, all of this to say, you know, we want to be honoring our horses and making sure that we're not stressing them out by expanding our duration too quickly. But that's something that I tend to see in R plus horses or like in ridden behaviors where we end up getting this like step, stop, check loop that we have going on where it's like the horse wants to offer like one step and they get really stuck. I'll see people who are, you know, have been developing like walking forward under saddle with R plus and they're like taking one step at a time or two steps and they've maybe made it up to like five steps and it's been like 3 months or something like that. To me, what that does is it ends up, the more you are reinforcing those short duration, the more frustrating it becomes for the horse to expand it. And you're never going to get big energy. You're never going to get them sinking into that play drive if you're only doing it in these like really, really small micro durations. But again, it's, I'd rather see short duration and the horse not stressed and the rider or the handler safe and the horse safe than trying too hard to get something big and ending up stressing out the horse, putting them over threshold or creating a dangerous situation. So of course it's, you know, you have to balance those two things, but that's something that I see, you know, if you're noticing that pattern in your training with your horse, you know, just taking a look at what you're focusing on and how you potentially could be focusing on too short a duration, and you should be focusing on expanding that duration so that we can get more fluid movement.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That's great advice. So I feel like it's pretty a common thing that we as horse owners do. We portray human characteristics onto horses, even though, as obvious as it is, horses are not humans. Can you explain a little bit about some like equine behavior and often signs our horses are showing us that we are misunderstanding or misinterpreting as humans?
Yes, definitely. Well, the first one I would say, which I think if you're delving into positive reinforcement, maybe this is something that you're looking at in terms of equine behavior, but the most common classic one is the, you know, whoever moves whose feet is the dominant one, and the idea that there is a dominance hierarchy in horses, and there, you know, especially when it comes to horse-human relationships, that there isn't a, the horse isn't able to idealize the, or comprehend the idea of dominance in this relationship. And so that's one that, you know, it's a myth that I would love to see dispelled completely at the time, because I think that's one of the most harmful ways that we view horses, especially when it comes to horse care. You know, if you're looking in your herd or, you know, a small group of horses, and you're seeing one horse that's consistently quote unquote dominant, the dominant one that's like being really aggressive or displaying a lot of resource guarding behaviors, instead of addressing the root causes of that and seeing if there's any lifestyle changes we can do to better meet their needs, instead we just label them as, you know, dominant or pushy or the boss mare or, you know, whatever phrasing that gets used. And then that horse ends up, you know, suffering, in for lack of a better word. And a lot of times the training ends up suffering too. If a horse is experiencing high levels of stress where they're feeling like they have to be in resource guarding mode all the time, we're going to be dealing with that inadvertently throughout all of our training sessions. You know, the horse wakes up at the beginning of the day, well, whenever they wake up, you know, they have, we say like the idea of having spoons as a person, where like every action or every like difficult interaction or every time you're like thinking, you like take away a spoon, and at a certain point you're out of spoons and like there's nothing, you just, you know, that's when you're going to be exploding or like snapping at your partner or snapping at your horse when you're out of spoons. And now you think about that with a horse, they're starting their day already super stressed, already having to feel like they need to be really protective. And then you go into a training session with them and you expect them to be able to have, you know, a good level of emotional availability and mental availability. And it's like, we've already run that horse's tank down to the ground because of their lifestyle before we even take them out of the paddock or pasture. So that's a huge one. And then of course that also translates over into, you know, how people work with horses, this idea that like we need to move their feet, or if we let them move our feet, that somehow we're, you know, allowing them to like disrespect us. That's another one, the whole like idea of respect, that horses don't understand that like when you have a horse who is muggy or pushy, when especially when you're using positive reinforcement, it is not that that horse is disrespectful. It is that you have not appropriately set that horse up to be able to understand the safe boundaries. So this idea of like respect or disrespect is another one. And then possibly slightly unrelated, but also various calming signals that people have misinterpreted as, you know, signs that the horse is relaxed or is in like a really good place. And one of the biggest ones that's like kind of my big bugaboo, especially when it comes to positive reinforcement, is dropping, which again, possibly unrelated to the question, but it's, I like to take every opportunity to talk about it. If you're noticing that your horse is dropping during a session, and by dropping, I mean like their penis is being dropped out of their sheath. A lot of people are like, oh, it's a sign that they're relaxed. But to me, that's a huge signal that your horse is experiencing stress, and that they are either frustrated by miscommunication, lack of timing, feeling like they have done the behavior, but it's not getting the reward, you know, inconsistency in reward timing or inconsistency in what we're rewarding for. And because positive reinforcement, again, is such an incredibly powerful tool, we can also inadvertently teach them to stay dropped. And so that if we're not aware of that early on, we can kind of accidentally be training for a behavior that we don't necessarily want to see because it started in a stress response. And then it can become an issue, especially if you're trying to work on like bigger movements and stuff like that.
Wow, that's really fascinating. I had no idea about that. So that's really cool that you brought that up.
Yeah, it's something I see. It's really, really common, unfortunately, in the positive reinforcement world, because again, we're kind of always teetering right on the edge of potentially stressing our horse out if we're missing communication. Because again, like food is such a strong motivator, and this modality is such a strong training style that it can be really easy to accidentally overstress them. So yeah, it's something I see a lot, and yeah, just hoping to raise awareness about it, because again, most people don't understand. And you know, you can't address what you don't necessarily know. So yeah, trying to get that information out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Since we kind of talked a little bit about behaviors that are showcasing stress, can you talk a little bit about behaviors that showcase that your horse is like in tune and wanting to work with you?
Yeah, so that is slightly more ambivalent because every horse is different, but I do like to look for, you know, relaxed, deep breathing. One of the things that a horse can do sometimes when they get really tense is they're no longer breathing really deeply. And so we get a lot of horses that are like shallow breathing while they're kind of like waiting for the next cue. So nice, you know, noticing good, deep rhythmic breaths, making sure that the horse isn't experiencing like wide changes in expression throughout. So like, of course, when we're working in like really high effort behaviors, you're going to have a horse that's like expressing a high effort expression. But if you're doing stationary behaviors or behaviors that aren't super taxing physically, you don't want to be seeing a horse that's like, you know, has like super tense face, peaked eyes, you know, a tense muzzle. You want to be looking for a nice soft relaxation. Let's see. Smooth movements is another one. Like a horse that's really stressed, or even just mildly stressed, or trying to explore different ways to get to the right answer, might like move in these kind of like choppy movements. And you see that a lot with horses that are learning how to develop their behavior around food. You'll see, like, I call it the boomerang, where they like move their head away and they bring it back really quick. They move their head away and they bring it back really quick. They're like trying to figure it out. They want to like, it gets these like really jerky behaviors. And so looking again for that like smooth, flowy behavior movements in the horse kind of shows me that my horse is feeling good and comfortable and able to understand and flow with how I'm interacting with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you are working with a horse, are you kind of letting the horse lead that session, or how does that work?
It definitely depends. With my own horses, I do tend to let them lead the sessions. I feel very lucky to be able to offer my horses such a specialized environment. I own my property and I get to keep them here and I get to develop their whole world around them and pretty much specifically for them, which is fantastic. But I know that not everybody has that. And so, you know, you need to be able to have times where you're working on specific behaviors like trailer loading or, you know, standing, not necessarily, you could be standing tied or like standing faux tied, like have a, you know, looped rope or something like that, developing these behaviors, working with, you know, developing behaviors around farrier work, vet work, that kind of thing. And so a lot of times when I'm working with my horse, it is very horse led. I let them kind of, we basically just do these flow sessions and we're working on developing movement. But then also I like to set aside specific times where we're working on certain behaviors, just touching on, again, touching on feet, touching on getting farrier work or veterinary work done, loading, haltering, that kind of a thing is something that I kind of consider like my base horse keeping behaviors that I just like to touch on with all my horses at various times throughout the year. And again, with positive reinforcement being such a powerful training tool, the great thing is you can kind of work on it and like develop a behavior and then kind of just keep it refreshed throughout the year. And you don't have to be doing it daily once it's an established behavior. So, with my client horses, it's different. So a lot of times, if I have a specific behavior that I'm working on, that's what I will be working on in our sessions. But I do like to mix it up and let the horse lead because I do feel like that's important for them to feel like a co-creator in our relationship. And I feel like that really helps to keep them interested and motivated when it comes to doing the like quote unquote boring sessions, like where we're working on stationary behaviors or we're working on, you know, horsekeeping behaviors and various different kind of like, you know, not fancy things. Like we're not practicing Spanish walk or Spanish trot or anything like that. We're just working on, like, can you calmly, you know, self-halter and that kind of a thing.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. So at least in what I do, I feel like I see sometimes a lot of horses who are really shut down or maybe have a lot of learned helplessness. Is positive reinforcement something that can help kind of bring those horses out of that?
Yeah, I think it's probably the most effective that I've found, the most effective modality for helping a horse kind of break out of that shutdown. When it comes to, because I do think there's a difference between positive reinforcement and autonomy, like giving your horse autonomy, you can very easily create very robotic horses with positive reinforcement. And so it doesn't necessarily, they're not like mutually exclusive. And so I think that using positive reinforcement as a communication tool to help them like start to become more interested in that connection, but also allowing them to have autonomy, which means, you know, honoring their no, giving them a variety of different behaviors that they can offer that can be rewarded. I will say horses who are shut down and begin to go through the process of kind of waking back up again, especially when you're working with giving them autonomy and giving them, you know, freedom, they a lot of times take that opportunity to express their no quite clearly. And so I do think it's something that if you have a horse who's super shut down, working with an experienced trainer is really, really valuable so that they can help walk you through, you know, not taking things personally, excuse me, help you through not taking things personally when the no's keep coming, being able to kind of brainstorm creative ways to help them feel comfortable with saying yes, making sure that you don't feel like you're failing when it comes to this process, because it can be a really hard and steep process when it comes to, you know, helping these horses break out of that. Then again, there also are horses who really like jump at that opportunity to switch modalities and go like, oh my gosh, I love this so much, I want to engage. So you might have a horse that's really shut down and you start positive reinforcement, all of a sudden they're a super engaged, super connected partner. And so just making sure that you are aware that there is a possibility that it could be a bit of a harder process for some horses, and not to feel like a failure, or not to feel frustrated, or not to feel like it's you know, a personal issue, but just knowing that, you know, just like humans, they all go through their processes differently, and depending on their level of trauma and their level of learned helplessness, it might be something that's really hard for them to break out of, and it might take time, but that given time and given appropriate training, they absolutely can. And a lot of times it's like just the most rewarding thing to watch those horses come back to life.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. And then on the opposite end, do you have any experience working with horses that may be deemed dangerous or maybe have just gotten away with too much? And so, you know, they're kind of more pushy.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that, and this is because I've had a lot of experience with horses who are, you know, dangerous or who have dangerous behaviors. I think that with a really clear, consistent, concise training program, if you are able to address all of their needs physically, you know, not ruling out pain, because it's almost impossible to rule it out, but addressing pain issues, you know, making sure that they're using their body properly, making sure that their stomachs aren't hurting, making sure they don't have ulcers, making sure they have, you know, species appropriate diet, access to hay, access to horses, and then starting to address their behaviors using, you know, positive reinforcement to help reestablish healthier behavior patterns. I've had a lot of success with that, and personally, it's kind of like one of my favorite things to do. So I find it like fun and easy, but it also can, you know, I utilize a lot of protected contact. you know, because I have so much experience with it, I can read their body language really well. I know how to keep myself safe. I know how to help them. But a lot of times it's a matter of addressing their lifestyle and making sure their lifestyle is species appropriate. And then everything gets so much easier after that.
Yeah, absolutely. So since I know you kind of just touched on it, but if somebody is wanting to get into this with their horse, or even just looking to kind of start somewhere new with their horse, what's a good starting point, do you think?
There's a lot of really great resources online. I don't know the books off the top of my head, but I can send you some if you want to like put it in, you know, kind of a little write-up.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of really great courses online. I think it's the IIABC, which is the International Association for Animal Behavior Consultants, or I think something like that.
Okay.
They offer some really great courses for, you know, developing understanding of equine behavior, training protocols, being certified as a LEMA trainer. Then there's really great positive reinforcement programs too. Like the Willing Equine has a really fantastic course. Mustang Maddie has a great course. And then there's, you know, there's so many people online that who post, you know, examples and videos online. And it's just make sure that you're doing enough education to where you can look at an example video. Say you're just following somebody on Instagram, make sure you have enough education that you can kind of look at that with a guarded eye, because there is lots of examples of positive reinforcement that could potentially stress a horse out, or that could potentially get you in danger if you were to just copy that exactly. So making sure you have a good foundational understanding of it and a good foundational understanding of horse behavior, so that you can keep yourself safe and you can have more success with your partner.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. And then you offer one-on-one sessions too, like virtually, right?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have an intro to positive reinforcement session that's related to working on Pillar's work with the balance through movement method. I really like that as like, if you're unable to do an in-person session, I find that that has a twofold approach. It helps the horse get their body more balanced, and it helps you to develop really great safe working relationship with positive reinforcement.
Okay.
I'm not currently offering virtual work for like more advanced behaviors, just because it is really hard to work virtually, and I value that in-person work so much. But yeah, people are welcome to reach out if they're interested or want to book a clinic or anything like that.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much for all your information today. I think that this will really help people out.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Write us a 5-star review and tell me what you thought about this episode. Maybe something that you learned or something that you don't quite understand still. I would absolutely love to hear from you. And writing us a review really helps us get the podcast out there for others to hear and learn. If you're not subscribed yet, make sure that you are so that you can get notified every time our episodes drop. Otherwise, we will see you next time. Bye. Got it like that.